And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. I gotta tell you, I love working with DJ and PK, but there's some downsides to working with those two.
Okay.
As well.
Spill the tea.
For example, like, I bopped into the office today, feeling pretty good. My family had one of those, like, good team mornings, you know, like, where everybody was, like, on the same page. Like, yeah, coming in, gonna talk some tourney. Big T, Thurl Bailey is going to be on the show today, which, man, he is the freaking best. I'm so excited to talk to him. And I get to talk to him all the time. But we'll talk some jazz, Ben, because we're off to do that. But I want to talk to him about the Wolfpack. I want to talk to him about NCAA tournament, part of one of those legendary runs. And really excited to have Thurl on the show at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, so stay tuned for that. So I was feeling good, Ben. I don't know what kind of mood you bounced in, but the sun is out.
Yeah, beautiful morning.
I'm wearing my Mountain West Conference, like, T-shirt hoodie that I freaking love.
Okay.
I've got my Kapalua golf shirt on over top of it, which, like, look good, feel good.
Life's good.
And then leave it to David and Pat to just bring up a topic that just irritates me so much. I mean, we're interacting with them for 3 minutes, and they, like, drop a grenade on my mood. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, hey, let's talk about something that's really irritating.
Well,
and now then Sarah goes, "You're up." And it's like, "Oh, hi, Ben. Oh, I'm in a great mood again." No. Oh. Ruined my mood.
Do what I do. Just don't talk to him. Just sneak
That's
in at the last second.
That's not what you do.
Sneak in at the last minute.
Oh, dude, we've gone 4 or 5 minutes into the show and you're still talking to David James.
Yeah, David. We love David. Loves to hang.
Oh, we do. We do love David, except for that. Like, man, I'm feeling good.
Well, there are different points in their lives.
Let's talk about something that's really irritating. Oh, thank you very much. Now I'm irritated.
Maybe they don't like each other. Maybe that's the secret. They don't like each other, and then after 4 hours of doing a show together for 20-plus years now, they're just unhappy when they leave the show every day.
Listen, I've heard of shows where they really hate each other.
Yeah.
You've worked on one. Actually, they don't hate each other. That's not true. But, like, there are shows in—
To clarify, I've liked everyone I've done my shows with.
No.
It sounded like you were implying—
Oh, sorry. Day. No. I mean, like, the hosts on the show you worked— on had conflict.
Sure.
But no, like, there was a, I don't know what market it was, where the morning show did not talk to one another ever. Like, well, hadn't talked to each other in, like, 7 years
famously,
or something crazy.
Yeah. There's been a lot. I know Dallas has had some issues. I know, obviously, Philly and Boston have had issues, and, you know, of, like, fights.
Yeah.
In the studio.
Right. Like.
Yeah.
Oh, man, can you imagine how miserable that would be? Anyway, my point is that those shows don't last 20-plus years. That doesn't—
It's too intimate, like, of a job.
Right, and you spend too much time together and all the things. And, no, David and Pat definitely like each other.
And we're lucky. I mean, honestly, I don't know if there's a bad apple in the bunch here. And I don't just mean it.
Oh, yeah.
The KSL Sports Zone. Okay.
But every team has to have a bad apple. That's fine. Even Lloyd has his function.
But everybody we work with on the digital side, every other radio station, upper management, like, we are very lucky. There's not just here comes the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Other than PK, apparently, for you when you walk in the door every morning.
Well, I guess. I don't know. Mitch is okay, I guess.
Michelle.
I mean, Michelle's all right. She, for somebody who went to Olympus. And I don't know how that resume made it past the pile as soon as Nate read a Olympus on there, he should have been like,
next. Next.
No, I echo your sentiments. We're lucky to work in such a great place. I love this station. I've worked at this station for a long time. Worked with some interesting people along the way, many of whom I loved.
Leave it at that.
I can't say everybody, but that's not realistic.
Sure.
I'm sure everybody didn't love me.
Absolutely. Not that I've heard stories, but...
Wow, really?
I'm saying I've not heard stories. I mean that.
I'm sure there are stories. Anywho, Ben, we're very excited about having Thurl Bailey on the show. Thanks to David and Pat for ruining my mood. How was your mood? How are you doing this morning?
I was happy until you subsequently took whatever you got from DJ and PK, and then you put it on my plate. You should have been the blockade. You should have stopped it. But now you've spilled it onto my plate, so I guess I got to figure out what's going on.
Well, and you know what? I knew today was bound to be an angry day, too, because we have What You Got Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
At 11:30. And you know what? Now I have, like, really negative feelings associated with that segment, so I don't know how it's going to go.
Okay.
I haven't gotten that much negative feedback on a segment than my performance in last week's What You Got Wednesday segment in a very long time. But here's the problem. I still feel like I was 100% in the right. So whereas people didn't like it.
Correct.
I'm still like angry about it. So now that segment has anger attached to it. So I don't know how I feel.
Double down. Let's make this a terrible segment at 11:30.
I don't know how I feel about
Let's
that.
Let's ruin people's weeks. We have that power.
My own mom didn't like me in that segment.
A good sign. You did something right.
She did. She said, I listened to the show all week and I did not like that segment.
Blame Hatch.
Yeah, we'll blame Hatch. Hatch was filling in.
Oh, I'm so glad Sarah's back. It wasn't Hatch's fault.
No,
it was your fault. And that, again, is what still angers me. You brought it up in the office the other day and it made me mad.
Yeah. Apparently it's a... to be in your bonnet. We'll survive. We'll see how we do this.
Yeah, buzzing around in there. And now we've got to do that at 11:30. All right, let's start off with something I'm angry about. Let's lean into it. I don't know if there's anything actually in the sports world that I'm all that angry about. You?
Oh, no, I'm enjoying the NBA. I watched some NBA games last night. Fun playoff races are heating up. I know that doesn't do anything for Jazz fans if you're solely a Jazz fan and not an NBA fan. But, you know, I continue to wonder what the future of this Jazz basketball team looks like, and I see warning signs all over the place of what you shouldn't do and what you should do, and I'm not sure how the Jazz get there. And that's not to say they can't. I'm just curious which pathway they take.
Would it scare you if the answer to that question is Jazz management has no idea what this team's going to look like in 2 years?
I think you are right. And I think we need to elaborate what that actually means. Because they're not guessing. It's not like Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck, like, yeah, there's nobody driving this car. Like, this is Thelma and Louise, except for both Thelma and Louise are in the back seat, and we don't know who's going to drive this thing off the cliff. That's not what's going on. I think that's what a lot of people think is going on. Like, they have different options. They just don't know which one of those options I think is going to present itself first. And I think that's where the mystery of what this team looks like in 2 years. But I don't personally believe, the way I know some people do, that there's nobody at the helm, that there's nobody steering this car or making competent decisions. And I don't think that's accurate at all. You know what I was really thinking about? A way to phrase and maybe reframe how Jazz fans need to look at the Ryan Smith era. You know what he has done? He's expanded the standard deviation from average, that the Millers were never comfortable doing. And look, when you expand the standard deviation, that goes in both directions. So he has lowered the floor, which we've seen each of the ends of the last 2 years, which the Millers were not all that comfortable doing and really never did back-to-back years like the Jazz are going to do this season, where they're going to finish with a worse record this year than they did last year. But I also think he's hoping, and this is on them, that standard deviation also rises the ceiling.
All right, I don't buy into the comparison to the Millers. I mean, I think the Millers were trying to win a championship as much as anybody. I never bought into the narrative that, oh, Larry was just comfortable making his profit from the playoffs and then calling it a day. I never bought into that then.
But his actions were really... more, his actions backed that up.
Yeah, he was happy to go in the luxury tax when he thought it was worth it.
Like one time.
When he thought it was worth it. Ben, the luxury tax hasn't even existed that long.
Sure,
so
it
let's
hasn't.
Not,
it hasn't.
Let's not pretend like we're going back to the 70s or something.
Right.
So he went into it one time with Booze and D-Will. What other time when the luxury tax existed did you want him to go into it? When John and Carl were 65? And Carl was either staying for the biggest deal in the league, which was on the table. Larry Miller said, I'm going to make you the highest paid player in the league, even though you're 110. And Carl said no. And he went to the Lakers because he said he wanted to win a championship. So it was at that point that he was being cheap? I mean, I don't know. I don't buy into that. And the Jazz went through a rebuild. They just picked multiple ways to do it. The first time they rebuilt, Kevin O'Connor said, I can do this on the fly, and we can sign free agents, and we cannot even miss a beat. And that kind of worked, but Kevin O'Connor wasn't planning, and maybe this brings it back to your first point about planning and that sort of thing. And what's the plan, Phil? He didn't know he was going to get Deron Williams in the draft, that it was even going to be necessary for them to suck one year. He didn't plan on sucking the year that the Jazz sucked.
Correct.
To get Deron Williams.
No, they were supposed to be really good.
That wasn't the plan. The plan was actually to sign Jason Terry and Corey Maggette and hit the ground running. And you know what happened? That got delayed a year because the Hawks and the Clippers both matched those contracts, and the Jazz were stuck going into the season with a team that was only supposed to win 12 games or whatever it was.
In fact, the first player that nobody really knows about, I think, was Gilbert Arenas.
That was later.
Was it later?
That was
later.
But
anyways, Gilbert Arenas was supposed to be in that conversation, too, to fix it. And a lot of guys didn't. He didn't want to come to Utah.
Right.
Jason
and he
Terry
went to Washington.
Corey Maggette would have,
instead. Jason Terry and Corey Maggette signed. Gilbert Arenas never signed.
Yeah.
But they signed here, and they got matched. And so they had that year where they outkicked their coverage, so to speak. And they end up the next offseason signing two more, well, one unrestricted free agent for nefarious purposes in Carlos Boozer, and another restricted free agent in Mehmet Okur. Oh, man, he might have been unrestricted. No, he was restricted because the Pistons were coming off the title
but
and
they
couldn't
were strapped.
And they couldn't match his contract. And then Kevin O'Connor said, all right, now we're off to the races. Carlos Arroyo, our point guard. Carlos Boozer, our power forward. And now we've got Mehmet Okur, the center champion. Here we go. And you know what happened that year, Ben? Mehmet Okur was fat. Carlos Boozer was hurt. Carlos Arroyo turned out to suck.
Andre Kirilenko was hurt.
And what happened? The Jazz sucked, and they got Deron Williams. And then 2 years later, they're in the conference championship again. You think that, like, Kevin O'Connor was like, yep, just like I thought.
Right. No, they thought Carlos Arroyo and Gordon Giracek, who they gave 4 years, $16 million deals to, which at the time was not insignificant, were like staples. And then, yes, Rajah Bell left. That hurt them. But that Boozer and Okur and Arroyo were going to be enough.
So let's fast forward to the next rebuild. They trade Deron Williams for Derek Favors, the pillar of the franchise going forward. And even then, tried to, like, kind of not break it all down because Devin Harris was part of the deal. And they thought, oh, we could put him with Al Jefferson. And, Devin Harris is almost as good. You know, and then you had the lean Ty Corbin years, which were weird until it bottomed out. Then they had the Dante Exum, and then it's been another how many years rebuilding it? Three? After that, before they made the playoffs? And at that point, they thought they were building around Gordon Hayward.
Sure.
Who ended up making an all-star team and then leaving after beating the Clippers in the playoff series. The rebuild was finished, and the best player left. They happened to draft somebody that was the perfect fit for them and hit the ground running. And, oh, yeah, on this team, instead of Derek Favors being the pillar, they switched midstream to Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
You think Dennis Lindsay was like, just like I planned when I took the job in 2000 and whatever. No, no, no. It's just not how the NBA works.
Right.
It's what do you do with the circumstances given and at the right time. Ben, compare, think about the financial world. Think about how, by the way, TrajanWealth.com, T-R-A-J-A-N, TrajanWealth.com. How many of the smart people that analyze this thing, the economists, the talking heads, the people out there have been telling you for 2 years that a recession is imminent?
Oh, we've been in a recession for 3 years, according to some people.
Right. And I don't doubt that these people study and try to put themselves in the best position to have the best, but they don't control anything. And who was the one who made money off the Great Recession? The one guy who was like, God, these assets here are worthless. I got to short this. It was like three guys. I've seen the movie.
Yeah. It was Christian Bale.
And all of a sudden, those guys own islands in the South Pacific because they were adaptable to the situation and the circumstances given to maximize what they had. If everybody could do that, everybody would. The point is that you hire the right people to navigate the circumstances that are given when they're given. Timing, if you have one, and sorry I'm windy on this, Ben, but if you have one criticism to make of Danny Ainge as a GM, probably one would be sometimes his timing. He's waited too long.
Historically, and actually not in Utah, but historically.
In Boston, he sat on a bunch of stuff for a long, long time. Whereas maybe his best moves in Boston, he did overnight because he had to. So timing is a thing. Right? And Kevin Garnett wasn't available the year before,
right,
or 6 months before, or Ray Allen wasn't available, or all these, you know, these deals that he just made overnight. They were terrible that year going into that whole thing. So, like, what's the plan? Everybody, what's the plan? Well, you know what? They probably have an outline of what we'd like to see get done, but they don't know. They don't know who's going to be on the team in 2 years.
I think the word you used in there, which is the key, which is the strength, is adaptable. They have the abilities to adapt to whatever the landscape of the NBA presents, and they can strike when they feel they need to strike. That could look like any number of things. And I think because there's a lack of clear direction, like what that plan is going to be, like a fully defined plan of, hey, to your point, okay, well, midseason you have Carlos Boozer, you have Mehmet Okur, but you're not playing well. Well, you're going to trade Carlos Arroyo, you're going to slip back in the draft, and then you're going to draft a point guard because that was a strong point guard draft, and everyone knew, well, you're going to get Deron Williams, Chris Paul, or Raymond Felton. You're going to be fine. You just knew that was going to be the case. And that felt linear and logical and easy to point to of like, well, that's going to fix it, and it did. That's not where the Jazz are right now, and I think that's why a lot of people have a hard time wondering,
but
like, what does it look like?
Nor was that ever the plan, though.
No, it wasn't going into the year. No.
That pick was never, well, we're going to do this because, you know, we've been studying this draft for 3 years, Ben, and we see, man, those point guards are just terrific. We've been following this class since they were 14 years old, and we know these point guards are going to be awesome, so we're going to suck this year. That wasn't it.
No.
That wasn't what
not
they—
Not until mid-season of that year. When the team had fallen apart and Boozer was not healthy and they were not winning games. They won like the first couple of games of the season and then it fell apart really
quickly.
They
bet on Carlos Arroyo.
Yeah, they did. They paid him.
And he wasn't it.
No, he was not.
So they weren't trying to get a pick in this point guard heavy draft.
Midway through that season.
If then, I don't remember that Jazz team intentionally trying to lose games.
I mean, they ended up with like 26 wins, right? It was like
right,
the worst
because
they had ever had.
Look at who they were playing. Because everyone was hurt, but Jerry at no point was like, in our best interest to lose games. That is not a thing that happened.
Not his MO.
No. So I don't think that was somehow magic foresight. But you're giving what happened way too much credit.
Well, I mean, by halfway through the season, they were an awful team. That's not an argument. And they knew they were going to be a lottery team. I mean, they knew
sure,
it. They knew
but,
midway through they were going to be a,
sure,
and, like,
were,
a high lottery
You're implying
team.
There's something strategic, like all of a sudden they decided to start losing. That didn't happen.
No, but you can recognize, and that was a different era of the NBA when nobody was really tanking, not like this.
Right, so it was luck, if anything.
But they still finished with like the fifth worst record in
Absolutely,
the NBA.
Because they were terrible.
So, but again, it goes back to this point of, you knew midway through the season this was going to be a team that had a top five or six pick. And you knew what the problem was on the team. And you knew what was going to be available.
But that's purely coincidental.
Right.
Like you're implying that something strategic needs to happen today.
No, I'm saying it's the exact opposite. I'm saying that's what I think a lot of Jazz fans want. Jazz fans want to have that similar situation where they can point and say, well, yeah, this is the obvious answer. It's why Jazz fans were on board with the Dante Exum year. Now, it just so happened you got Dante Exum. But when that team was dreadful and was tanking games and the end of the Tyrone Corbin era was so miserable, you could say, yeah, well, I know that Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker and Joel Embiid are at the end of this draft and this is all worth it. Well, they don't feel that way this now, and that's why I think they feel like it's a little bit aimless.
Excellent example, Ben, because ultimately the fans were wrong.
Right, absolutely.
Ultimately, yeah. The fans were wrong. So now, do fans want to be right, or do fans want their team to win?
They want to be right.
I think they want their team to win.
No, fans
I think
want to
they'd
be
gladly be wrong. They booed Gordon Hayward on draft night.
Sure, they booed John Stockton.
They were happy to be wrong about that.
Of course,
I think fans are happy to be wrong as long as their team wins.
They will always celebrate the team doing well, but the fans, when they're arguing online, are arguing because they're right, because they think they're right, and because they think the Jazz are doing it wrong. And what I'm saying is, the difference between what Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck are doing now versus Kevin O'Connor midway through that season saying, well, there's point guards in this draft, so we're just going to get a point guard in this draft, and everyone knew it, and what the Jazz did with Tyrone Corbin in the last year of his tenure in Utah, which is, well, we're going to go out and get one of these guys, Embiid, Wiggins, Parker. The Jazz are saying, we're not even betting on that one thing happening. And they are leaving themselves adaptable for all these different options. Whereas there was a direct plan at the end of the Tyrone Corbin era. Tank that year, get your superstar, you have a face. You're going to add a point guard in 2005-06, and you're going to get somebody to pair with Carlos Boozer. Because Carlos Boozer's good, he's just hurt. But Carlos Boozer is good. And you know if he has a point guard, you can get back to the Stockton and Malone pick and roll with Jerry Sloan. They thought that. And that's why they did exactly what they did. They didn't plan on that in the year, but midway through the season, that became an option. This is not what the Jazz are doing this year. And I think that's what has Jazz fans ruffled, is that there is not even that set of a plan. There is not even that design. There's not even that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow this year, because we know this draft isn't very good. And the Jazz don't even have a top five pick unless they win the lottery, which they had both of those 2 years, which I think made it easier for Jazz fans. They had to trade up to get D-Will, but I think they were at five. So I think that's why fans feel like this season is a little bit aimless and why there's quote-unquote no plan, which I completely disagree with, but I recognize that it doesn't have the same clear target that those 2 years did the last two times the Jazz have really done this.
I just hope the front office is smarter than the fans.
Well,
I mean, it's a good thing that the fans' opinion arguing online don't matter, because if the Jazz do something and it works, those fans are going to be fine.
Absolutely. And they know that. And that's the issue. And then, you know, this idea that the Jazz are going to lose fans or that people are going to stop buying tickets, like, maybe. Billing. And then guess what? Start out the season 5-1, and guess who comes back? Like, the fans. Like, with all due respect, Jazz people in Utah love the Jazz. They're going to come back. They're always going to be there.
Listen, they're still selling tickets now.
Right.
I agree that the in-person fan gets the shaft most of the time. And I don't blame fans for not going if the product is not does not meet the expectation. But I think that I've been here through both of the rebuilds we just talked about in previous years. And the fans are always there.
Yep. And they come back quickly.
They're always there. I'm telling you, back in the Quinn Snyder rebuild or whatever, like the lowest nights got was 15-16. So, I don't know what losing fans or whatever, but do you really want your front office to be listening to the fans? Do you really want your front office to be listening to radio bozos like you and me? Of course not. Now, where front offices have to be careful is if you really lose the fans, then your end is coming quicker than it would otherwise.
I'm trying to imagine what it would take for Jazz fans for the Jazz to lose fans.
No, like, I'm not talking about losing fans. I mean, like, if the fan base turns on you.
Right. I'm trying to figure out what the Jazz would have to take to have the fan base turn on them.
It'd take a lot.
It would take a lot.
It'd take a lot.
Because
the fan
close.
Base hasn't really turned on anybody. They turned on Ty Corbin a little bit. Well, no. They turn on players. I can think of players they've turned on. But, like, the fans turned on Carlos Boozer.
Of course.
Like, even if he wanted to come back, he wasn't coming back. Because he was so unpopular by the time he left, which still doesn't make a ton of sense to me, but it is what it is. But the fans didn't turn on Kevin O'Connor. The fans didn't turn on Dennis Lindsay. The fans certainly never turned on Frank Layden. Still a legend to this day. Didn't turn on Jerry. They could have turned on Jerry all those years that they
some
made
did.
The playoffs,
you know,
and,
I mean, and
didn't
did.
Make it to the championship.
And some did.
I mean,
some thought Jerry was the problem.
But, like, we've seen local, like, BYU, that fan base turned on Gary Croton, and that was it for him. I mean, he could have been the most popular guy on campus, and there's no way he was keeping his gig because the fan base wasn't having it.
And then you start a season 5-2 on the football field, and everyone's coming back and can't wait to get there.
Right. No,
and
they
we'll
turn
spend whatever it takes to buy tickets.
But that's the thing. They turn on Gary. I'm talking about individual
sure.
job security. Like Gary. They turn on Gary.
Yeah.
And it was over for him, not over for – and maybe this is goes to the overall point of Jazz fans aren't going anywhere. Ute fans turned on Jim Boylan. Does that mean Ute fans are no longer Ute fans, or does it mean they turned on Jim Boylan?
Right, Jim Boylan.
If the fans had turned on Witt as opposed to supported Witt, maybe this is the ultimate example. Remember at that basketball game, right after my guy Gordon Monson wrote a column that Kyle Whittingham could possibly go to BYU? Chris Hill was introduced at a basketball game. What happened, Ben? Booed mercilessly.
Yep.
What happened shortly thereafter? Kyle Whittingham signed an extension. And you know what? It was the best move.
Of course.
And Chris Hill can take credit for it. But I don't know. Fan opinion is interesting. I don't want a fan's opinion on, you know, what I should do next. But if the fans really do revolt, it's individuals that go, not the teams that pay the price. And I don't think the fan base is turning on anybody anytime soon.
No, and if they here's the thing, that the people they may turn on, Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck, like I don't know, they're pretty entrenched guys. Like I don't know what to tell you.
Jazz could have turned on Quinn Snyder and did not. I mean, he was largely responsible for losing playoff series.
Sure.
And anyway, interesting discussion, though. Top three stories of the day, KSLSports.com, coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go!
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Time for the top three stories of the day at KSLSports.com. Brought to you by J. Brooks Jewelers. Two locations to serve you, one on Winchester Street across from Fashion Place Mall. The other, Traverse Mountain in Lehigh. All right, Sarah, where are we starting today?
Number one, the Jazz host the Spurs tonight.
The most winnable game left on the Utah Jazz schedule. Now, does that mean that's the last game they're going to win or only game to win or that they're even going to win? I'm not sure. The Spurs did just beat the Phoenix Suns without Victor Wembanyama, but now they have to come on the road and play.
How healthy are the Jazz going to be tonight? Have we seen no Jordan Clarkson? Is that right?
Jordan Clarkson out, Lauri Markkanen questionable. So, yeah, we will see. It is not necessarily a surefire bet that the Jazz are going to have anywhere near their full roster. Clarkson out, Chris Dunn still suspended. Lowry questionable, otherwise two-way guys. If Lowry doesn't play, Jazz have a good chance to lose this game.
We didn't talk very much about the Chris Dunn suspension.
It'll be more interesting Friday when he comes back against the team he got suspended for fighting for the second time this season.
Because if it were me, I would have said, I didn't punch anybody, I was just moving my arm.
I'm sure he tried.
Because he didn't really throw a punch, you know, he just kind of chicken-winged it really hard.
And the problem is it's carryover from the last time they got into an interaction when I think Aaron Holiday picked the pocket of Keontae George, dunked on him, flexed on him. Chris Dunn took offense to that, and it became a whole thing. So anyways.
Well, then don't dunk and flex on Keontae George is the lesson.
Or don't get ripped. Yeah, Keontae. Don't get the ball stolen and then dunked on, and you'll be in better shape. Anyways, after tonight, the Jazz play the Rockets, who have been honestly the best team in the NBA for the last 10 games, at the Kings. Home against the Cavs, at LA, the Clippers, at the Warriors, home against the Nuggets, home against the Rockets. If you are a Jazz fan wanting to see a win before the end of the season, this might be your chance. And it's no guarantees, obviously.
Well, and you get to see Wemby.
Probably. He didn't play in the last game, like I said. I haven't seen what
hopefully
his
hopefully you'll get to see Wemby.
Yeah.
He is the newest, latest, unique thing in the NBA.
Yeah, he's the newest must-see.
If he really is. We'll see. I'm really curious as to what his potential ends up being. And if San Antonio can take advantage of that. I don't think Dallas has taken fully advantage of having a player like Luka.
Correct. It's this funny thing of, we talked about it a little bit in the last segment, of just like the plan of how to rebuild the Jazz and the idea of like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's like, okay, well, and look, San Antonio has flexibility. I think guys are probably going to be encouraged about playing next to Victor Wembanyama, so they may be willing to play there, but like not everyone has loved playing for Pop recently. And they've got to hit on their draft picks. Then they've got to make some trades to bring in the players, and then they've got to make sure those players fit. Like, it's really hard to do.
Pop's short term.
He just signed a 6-year extension for like $70 million. He might live it out.
He might not.
He just signed the extension, though.
No, I got it. But you know what? Coaches do that. They sign extensions until whenever, in part to give themselves the ability to retire when they want. And I don't know, how old's Pop now? In his
70s.
Got to be late 70s.
He's like 72, 73. But anyways, yeah, I'm not sure. I can look it up.
But, like, I don't know.
75.
San Antonio's got to be planning a next generation. Or, I mean, Wemby's going to be playing way longer than Pop's coaching.
Absolutely.
I mean, let's not pretend like Pop's going to be coaching
You hope
him.
It's all in San Antonio if you're a Spurs fan.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, you've got to be making some sort of strategy for an exit from him. And, you know, the Spurs are a great franchise, but there's now new people running the show. Or will be very shortly. I mean, how old's R.C. Buford? He's got to be 105, too. I mean, so do they make the correct decisions to surround a unique player? You got the tough part, but that's not the end of the job.
And then it comes down to timing. Like, Victor Wembanyama wants to win. He doesn't want to keep waiting. He's too good to continue to play for these teams that are going to win 13 games.
I have no idea if Victor Wembanyama
want
to win.
He does.
He says that? I don't necessarily. I've heard lots of players say that.
It's because of how he did everything in France before he got here. Like, he is so driven to be the guy. His whole life is set up to be the guy.
The guy and winning are not the same thing.
No, it's about winning. He has set his whole life up to be the rookie of the year, to be the number one overall draft pick, and then to start winning titles. He's already talking about winning defensive player of the year, and he's not going to do any of that unless his team is winning. And he knows that, and he's going to put pressure on them to win.
He says that.
So, I will be curious, do they try and make, like, a Trae Young trade this offseason to, like, really accelerate this winning timeline for Victor Wembanyama? And I could see it.
Well, I mean, they have room to do it, sure. But as we talked about in the last segment, and I know we have to move on, Sarah, like, you can want to do something very badly. That doesn't mean there's something to be done that's available, let alone something smart. In fact, that's when bad decisions are made.
Exactly right. That's why I'm saying, it's so hard to build a title contender when you are a 12-win team.
But, like, just because San Antonio wants to turn the corner next year doesn't mean that that's a possibility.
Right.
And, in fact, again, that's when bad decisions are made, because all of a sudden you're desperate to do something and then you're, you know, given 3 first rounds for Otto Porter or something.
We have this concept that, like, oh, well, the Spurs always figure it out. Well, no, they drafted David Robinson. He went to the Naval Academy. They had 2 years to build a team into a winner before he even joined them as a rookie. They did that, and by the time he joined, they were on a good team. And then, of course, we know the fluke with Tim Duncan. Robinson hurts his back. They sink for 1 year. They draft Tim Duncan on a team that was already a perennial playoff team, and all of a sudden they're a championship contender in the second season. Like, they've never done this. They've never been a 12-win team trying to build a contender around a superstar. They've drafted superstars at opportune times.
Yeah,
They've never done this, so we'll see what they do.
Yeah, but then, you know, everybody gets credit for being a genius, even though they're really not one, which is kind of hilarious. I mean, Popovich himself stepped down to replace, who was that guy?
Larry Brown?
No.
Wasn't it?
It was Brian Hill, I think was his name. They fired Tark and hired Brian Hill, and then Pop's like, well, hey, this Tim Duncan's pretty good.
I can do this job.
What's next?
Number 2, the NCAA president calls for a ban on college prop bets.
I love the sentiment. I don't know how they'd enforce that.
Bob Hill.
Bob Hill. Brian Hill was coach of the Magic.
Yeah.
Bob Hill.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways.
Sorry about my faulty memory. Yeah, I think the NCAA should do that, but how do you enforce that?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you prevent gambling sites from having prop bets?
I mean, if the NCAA could have prevented casinos from betting on their games in the past, wouldn't they have done that? In like the 70s when they have said, like, you can't bet on our games? I don't think they have that. I don't think they can do that.
Prop bets are the easiest thing to manipulate,
correct,
right?
Yeah.
If you're a player. So I like the idea that they're trying to save the players from themselves. But yes, enforcement is always an issue. They've constantly tried to prevent the players from hurting themselves off the field.
I don't think DraftKings, if you called up DraftKings and said, you can't do props on our sports anymore, they'd say, well, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. So I'll be curious how they would enforce this.
Yeah. So, I love the sentiment, but, I mean, the NCAA has trouble enforcing things that they actually can enforce. But I don't know. Maybe you write your congressman or something.
Yeah, and maybe that's how you do it. Maybe you can get it passed legally to prevent prop bets from college sports.
I mean, that's what you'd have to do. All right. Next.
Number 3, the Running Utes face VCU tonight.
Home game, last home game of the season for the University of Utah men's basketball team, where they've been good. And VCU is a relevant basketball program for the last 20 years. So, get a win.
I think in college basketball, you can actually look and say, what's the plan, a lot better than you can in the NBA. I wonder what the plan is for Utah, because they lose a lot of players. So if you've got this thing envisioned in your mind of like this building process, like kind of happened under Larry Krzyzkowiak, I don't think that's reality either. If I'm Mark Harlan, I'm asking Craig, I'm saying, what's the plan, Craig?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the NIT is nice, and it's great. Some of these guys are getting a chance to play more games, but like they're done. You know, Brandon Carlson's gone. Like, so what's the plan?
Yeah. And unfortunately, I would suspect that Craig Smith flips it around and says, well, how much money can you give me to get these players? That's the plan. Here's the 50 best transfer portal players. I need 3 of them. There's 330 other schools trying to get these guys. How are you going to get me at least 2 of them and maybe 3 of them, and then I will do the rest of the work to find them? How are you going to get your donors to cut me a check to get those players? Look, I don't think that's the right way to do it. I don't think that's the... You know, I don't think that's an easy plan, but I think that's what the conversation has to be for a lot of coaches.
I don't think getting the top 50 anything is Utah's recipe to winning basketball in college. It hasn't been in the past. I don't think it's going to start being. So if I'm Mark Harlan and my coach comes to me and says, well, why aren't you paying the best players in the country to play here? I'd say, well, that's never going to happen.
So what's your identity going to be?
So what's your plan? You know, I've given you the dough to go get this level of player, but go find Keith Van Horn. Sorry. I'm sorry. That's a tall task for you. Go over and find Jakob Poeltl, if that's easier. I mean, those guys weren't top 50 anything. They went and found those guys. DeLon Wright was a JC transfer, right?
Yeah. He was the National Junior College Player of the Year.
Yeah. He wasn't Nerlens Noel.
No.
I just picked a random one.
He was the best college player in the country. Yeah.
So that would be my response if I got that, well, go pay some players for me. I'd be like, well, where do you think you're coaching, bro?
I would go and look for juniors and seniors who have been overlooked at spots and try to get them into my program.
Ah, that's a more realistic plan now, isn't it?
And have an identity of what type of basketball you want to play, not just we're going to rebuild around whoever's on the roster.
Now you're speaking my language, yeah. Ben. That's something that Utah could actually do.
But can they do it? And then do you have the ability to coach those players up to get to the highest level?
Imagine Mark Harlan and Craig says, well, go get me, Craig, go pay me Nerlens Noel. Mark Harlan would laugh.
Yeah.
He'd say, I can't kick Kyle Whittingham, the number one recruit in the country, let alone you. So you can wait outside.
Got more meetings.
Stay tuned. More next. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you about Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. It's also a Win Ticket Wednesday. Be caller 12 right now. And at 801-575-ZONE, you're going to get a pair of tickets to go see A Day to Remember, a Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater on July 21st. 801-575-ZONE. That's 801-575-ZONE. Caller 12 right now. We're going to talk to Thurl Big T Bailey coming up next. We'll talk to him about some Jazz basketball, but also some NCAA tournament as well.
This has been a good tournament. This has been a fun tournament, and I'm excited about the teams that are left, and I think the best teams are left. I actually think they did a good job with the seeding this year. Thurl may disagree because of his NC State Wolfpack.
But, underseeded, Ben.
But you know what? They're in the Sweet 16. They've done everything they have to.
And it's very exciting. You still sticking with what's your final? UConn-Creighton?
UConn-Creighton. Creighton was my kind of gamble, right? That was the team that if they make the championship game are going to get me a lot of points because not a lot of people are going to have Creighton in the final. But UConn is the safe bet. So I have one. I've kind of hedged my bet with UConn.
I see.
It's my strategy.
Go with the favorite.
Yeah.
Go with the favorite.
Cool, go with the best team.
So we'll talk to Thurl Big T Bailey coming up next. Stay tuned. Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Than us.
Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. I want to remind you to nominate the youth sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest. And listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. Ben, let's get out to the zone phone. Our next guest, of course, does a terrific job on KJazz and Jazz Plus. He is a legendary member of the Utah Jazz, not to mention, Ben, a national freaking champion at NC State. He's the one and only Thurl Bailey. Big T, what's going on?
I like that title. I might start using that, a national freaking champion. I like it a lot.
How about the leading scorer of the national freaking championship game?
Yeah.
For the winning team. Big T Thurl.
Yeah, now I'm bragging. If I use that, I'm bragging. But I still like it.
You know what, Thurl? So I was talking to David Locke before the game. We saw you in the tunnel.
I'm sorry.
And Locke had, a 14-year-old, 15-year-old kid job shadowing him. And we said, that's Thurl Bailey. He played in arguably the most famous college basketball game of all time. I mean, I guess when you think of the most famous college basketball games of all time, you can help us settle this debate because you were in one of them. I mean, that is up there with, the two or three most famous ever, right?
Well, yeah, and it's not even coming from me. I think Sports Illustrated quoted that. Basically, they said it was the most exciting finish of any sport in the 20th century. So it's up there, right? I mean, it depends on, I was a part of it. So, it's going to be at the very top of my list. But I would even say outsiders looking in who know about the game, who know about the journey for the most part, because the game was one thing, right? But to get there was just as crazy. Game after game, something just happened to put us in the right position to win, and we did it. So if you know the story, I think you would feel that way as well.
Okay, so speaking of the story, I've got to ask you about this, and I'll apologize because I'm sure you've told this story a million times, but watching forever, I watched Jim Valvano running around looking for somebody to hug, like, what is going on? I mean, like, he's the coach, like, hug the man. And then I heard you tell the story. So I've got to ask you to tell the story of why that happened.
Well, the story is that, first of all, people don't understand this, but when we met Coach Valvano, he was the most unorthodox coach of his time, I think. I mean, we had practices where all we did was cut the nets down and just practice how it would be, how we would visualize winning a national championship, what we would do if that happened. And we thought it was the craziest thing that he could even imagine. But we did it often, and, you know, about the third or fourth time, you know, we're getting into it, we're celebrating. So it was more to him about getting out of your comfort zone and what will you do, as he put it, when we win a national championship. And so he got into this rhythm as we won game after game of the first thing he would do is run out and hug Derek Wittenberg. They would find each other and hug each other. And so it became kind of a ritual, if you will. And then we won the national championship, and the crowd rushes the floor, and Jimmy Valvano's running around looking for Derek Wittenberg, and he's not there. And so he's kind of, everybody's hugging somebody else. So he didn't know kind of where to go. I think he found this pile of cheerleaders that he just kind of jumped in. But it was pandemonium. And I think he was just trying to find his ground on who he could run to first, and just happened to be just a pile of people. But that was, again, that's part of the iconic video. Other than Lorenzo Charles Duncan, and then it's Jim Valvano running around looking for somebody to hug.
All right, Thurl, do you recognize, is it yearly, is it every few years, teams that kind of capture that same magic you guys had in the tournament? Like, is that a good strategy for winning the NCAA tournament? And can you see teams doing that year in and year out, or is that fluky and not something you can bet on?
Well, I think it's actually more likely to happen nowadays than it did back then. And listen, it's not easy to do. There's so many great teams out there. I think the playing field may be, I won't even say balanced, but more realistic because of transfer portal, you know, NIL, all that stuff that players jump from college to college. And I don't know. I just think that the way that it happened for us was kind of unadulterated basketball. You play because it's, you know, you got a scholarship. Most of those guys, you know, I know I probably wouldn't have gone to college if it hadn't been for basketball. So I think nowadays there's a story. There's a team that starts out every single tournament that just does something incredible, and people like to gravitate towards that kind of story. But most often than not, the best teams win, right? The strongest teams win. So I look at NC State and what they're doing now, and it just reminds me, it's so reminiscent of what we did. But to get all the way there, it's so difficult. The odds are obviously not in your favor. The stars have to align. Teams have to lose. You just have to hit your stride at the right time. So it's still there. I mean, everybody's looking for that underdog, that incredible story. So I'm hoping it's a team like NC State again this year.
Now, I asked this question tongue-in-cheek, but the basketball community here in Utah is somewhat small, and so I'm curious, every time you bumped into Dave Rose, did you remind him about the game? I mean, like, just so you know.
No, I never brought it up.
Never?
Yeah, I never. No, I'm not that kind of guy. Look, I see Hakeem Olajuwon, I see Clyde Drexler on occasion, and, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to rub it in. And they get it, right? I mean, those guys have gone on to become great players. Dave Rose went on to become a great coach. I'm hoping they bring it up.
Oh, man, Thurl, you're the best, because I'd bring it up all the time.
Oh, I would have brought it up. You beat Michael Jordan 2 out of 3 times in college, right? I would have brought that up every chance I got.
Well, you know, some things don't even need to be talked about, right? I mean, like, I've seen Michael since. Matter of fact, he used to have a place out here in Utah, and I would see him on occasion, and he would look at me, and because he fouled out in the ACC championship game that sent us to the NCAAs, and he looked at me and said, you know that wasn't a foul, right? There was an iconic moment where, he fouled out in the game, and they won it the year before we did. So that's all a part of that great journey, man. You know, all those great players have gone on to do great things, and, of course, I had a great career in the NBA, but I'm still on a text chat with my NC State guys, where we're just – phone's just buzzing right now because of what NC State's doing. But, no, you know, those guys understand. They were part of a great history. And even past the game, the legacy that Coach Valvano left, I think what Clyde Drexler always says, hey, look, if we don't lose that game, you don't get to know Jimmy V like you got to know him. So he was even kind of proud in a way to be part of that history and legacy of the great Jim Valvano.
All right, Thurl, we opened the show talking about the Utah Jazz and kind of that the hard part for fans is they don't know what the plan is exactly. And I actually think part of that is the strength of the team, which is they are just trying to remain versatile and adaptable to whatever the landscape of the NBA presents over the next 24 months. So let me ask you, in the next two seasons, 24 months, which I know is an eternity in the NBA now, like what do you think happens with the Utah Jazz? Is it just youth development? Is it an investment or trades in veteran players? Like, what does your gut tell you? What's the sense you get?
Well, without knowing the plan myself, I'd say all those things, right? I mean, I try to put myself in a player's shoes because I was one. And you know there is a plan, and it hasn't necessarily been laid out in front of you. You know there is a direction that you're going in. And I'm not even sure Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck know, you know, they I don't know if they could sit you down in a room and say, hey, this is exactly what the plan is. You know, I think they've been in the business long enough to know that there are opportunities that come up that you have to look at. So it's probably always moving pieces. And understanding that, you can understand the direction, though, that this team is going in, right? I mean, when you decide to not sign Kelly Olynyk and you trade him, that's a big piece of the now, right? I mean, Jazz were on a pretty good streak, and he was kind of a big part of that. But they were looking at the future. And you know that much. So you have to go out and try to achieve, if you will, Hardy, try to win with the team that you're giving, knowing that it's a process with the young guys and developing them. And you're going to see, well, you know, we know Lowry's probably going to be a big piece here. What else do we need? What else do we need? What else are we looking for? So, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat as everybody else, right? I know being in this business long enough that Danny Ainge has been successful in what he has done in that position. So part of this is you got to trust them. You got to be patient. You got to trust them. You know what they're trying to build. And, you know, it's kind of like construction, right? You might complain all you want that the road is horrible. When it gets fixed, you're like, oh, okay, this is nice. And so, you know, that's what we have to do. We don't know how long it's going to take because we don't know some of the things that could happen over the course of the next 2 years. So that's really all I can give you. I mean, I'm just as in the dark as you guys, but I understand that there is change. There is a process to get to that point. I look at other teams who've done it and are now reaping the benefits of it.
Oh, man, Thurl, the selection committee was mean to you. The Wolfpack, Marquette, you spent the last several years rooting for Marquette. This is a bizarrely personal game for you.
It is. It's a house divided. You know, my son played 2 years under Wojo there. And I gotta stay with my pack. Marquette's Shaka Smart's done a great job with that team, and it's going to be a tough game. I like my guys because, you know, DJ Burns is a guy who has solidified himself as a guy who can handle himself in the post and pass. But It's going to be a good game. You know, I think my Wolfpack will pull it out in the end, but it's not going to be it'll be a close one.
Go Wolfpack. What a story that would be. I mean, 5 wins in 5 days in the ACC tournament, then beating North Carolina, now in the Sweet 16. I mean, that would be special. So I'm cheering for it. Thurl, thank you so much
for coming on
with us. We really appreciate it. You're absolutely the best.
Anytime, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Big T. That's the man himself, the legend.
Thurl Bailey.
NCAA champion, Thurl Big T Bailey. Ben, do you realize that not only did the West region that year, then we're talking about the 1983 tournament, the semifinals and the finals of the region that year were played in Ogden. So Thurl, his Sweet 16 and regional final that year with NC State was in Ogden. Not only that, but they beat Utah in the Sweet 16, 75-56, and then beat UVA 63-62.
Yeah, that was the win over Utah, with all due respect, was their only blowout of their entire run.
Everything else was close.
Conference tournament, Wake Forest, North Carolina, Virginia, all extremely close games. Double overtime in the opening round of the playoffs, or of the NCAA tournament to beat Pepperdine. 71-70 over UNLV. Yeah, 75-56 over the Utes. And then 63-62 over Virginia again, 67-60 over Georgia, and then, of course, the buzzer beater to win the national title. Like, by the skin of their teeth, over and over and over. But all that matters is that you win.
Utah was a 10 seed that year, Ben, and they had upset two teams to get there. Illinois, the 7 seed, and then UCLA, the 2 seed.
Yeah, 18-14 on the season.
How about that?
Who was on that roster? Pace Mannion.
My guy.
Yeah.
Shout out to Pace. Who's back in town, by the way?
Oh, Manny Hendricks was on that team, too? That's funny.
Man, so cool. And so cool that that Thurl is a member of, not only a member of our community, but so accessible to talk about it. What a resource. That's so fun. Big thanks to Big T for jumping on with us. And, of course, I love Big T on the K-Jazz broadcast. He's great.
Like you said, you know, the next 2 years for the Utah Jazz, I bet it's really hard for the players to figure out what's going on. And I think that's actually where a lot of the trauma for Jazz fans comes from, because they identify with players more than they do the front office, obviously, even though it's funny, the players are more, I don't want to say disposable, but they come and go more often than front office members do. But you see the players every day. You fall in love with the players. You don't fall in love with the GMs generally. So when it doesn't seem like there's, you know, stable footing for the players, I think it makes the fans feel unstable as well.
Well, there's not.
There's not stable footing. No, there's not at all.
There's not. So, I mean, what, do you want to be lied to?
Right. No, exactly.
Will Hardy put it plainly after the, I think, Houston game, where he said, listen, any minute you get on the NBA court, you better be busting it, because
everyone's watching and you don't know what your next spot is.
He wasn't saying that just as a general philosophy. He's saying that about his team.
Yeah, absolutely.
That there isn't a player guaranteed to be on this team in 3 years. Not one.
Nope. Oh, 18 months.
So you're saying, oh, the fans don't feel stability because the players don't? Well, that's because there's not any.
Yeah.
It's not like John and Carl are on the team and 28 years old, and you're like, well, these guys are going to be here for another 10 years. Lowry's your best bet to be on the team in 3 years, and that's certainly not 100%.
No, by any means. I mean, again, the Jazz were had the best record in the NBA at this point 3 years ago. One of those players is still on the roster. One of them.
And listen, the team is conflicted on this because their actions and their message don't meet, and maybe that's where the fan
frustration... I think that is a lot of it as well.
Where it comes from, because the franchise actions are what we're talking about, where, like, yeah, they could cut the whole team tomorrow. They don't care. I mean, like, that's reality, and that's how their behavior is. But then their message is,
believe in us.
Fall in love with Keyonte George.
Yeah.
Fall in love with this jersey.
Fall
in love with the clinic. Fall in love with these players. You know, fall in love with this team, because they're great, and we know they're great, and they're going to be great, and all this stuff, which they don't even believe, but that has to be their messaging.
Right.
In Detroit, I'm sure they've been selling these young players that don't amount to anything forever. They probably knew they were never going to be on the team. Or maybe Detroit's a bad example. Maybe they thought they were going to be great. But you know what? Outside of Cade Cunningham and apparently Simone Fontecchio, ain't nobody going to be on that team.
I wouldn't be surprised if Cade was available this summer. Yeah, in all honesty, like, That's what happens. The number one overall pick that 2 years ago was the rookie of the year and the guy could easily be available, if not this summer, by the trade deadline.
Right. So, yeah, I guess you can forgive fans for feeling a lack of stability if that's really how it's going. I don't know. But, yeah, it's not very stable. They have to sell that it's stable because they're in the business of selling.
Yeah.
I mean,
correct.
They're selling everything.
Yeah.
That's the point of being here. But their actions don't necessarily meet with their messaging. But that's true across sports. That's true across business. I mean, businesses that are laying off tons of employees, Ben, what's their message publicly?
Things are good.
Good. These are just some maneuvering to best set us up for this and this and that, right? Even though it's like, well, if you could have kept those employees, I'm guessing you would.
You would have. I don't think you would have fired them on purpose.
What was the latest I heard? And far be it for me to question somebody's corporate strategy, but was it Macy's that I heard was closing like 200 stores? Or it might have been one of the dollar stores. I can't remember which one it was.
Both
but
are,
They're like, oh, yeah, but this is actually better because we're closing these stores and this store, and this is going to better set us up for this. And it's like, I don't know.
Doesn't sound good, actually.
It doesn't. It doesn't sound like things are going that well. Yeah, but we're going to strategically fire all these people because we can't afford it. Because things are actually good. But whatever.
Fun to talk to Thurl. Nice of him to jump on.
So nice.
Yeah.
All right, we've got What You Got Wednesday, and at least the sports part is inspired by Thurl Bailey. So stay tuned for that. Let's hope it goes better. It's Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3,
on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
What You Got Wednesday here on Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. If you're new to the show, we do 2 5 selection drafts, one sports related, one not. And you can have the first pick. I don't even want to relive last week's whatever. I don't care.
How did it go? Do we have the results on last week's?
Pretty sure you destroyed him in both.
I think it was a protest for Jake. All right, I've got the number one overall. No, you've got it. I won, so you get the number one overall pick. What are our drafts today, Sarah?
All right, so our sports draft is top 5 best Tobacco Road basketball players. So players from North Carolina schools.
College basketball in North Carolina.
UNC, Duke, NC State, Wake Forest. Okay.
UNC Asheville. UNC Wilmington.
Who was that huge kid who played for UNC Asheville a couple years ago?
UNC Charlotte. I don't know.
There was a huge kid who played there. It was just, anyways.
If you're giving, there is an obvious number one pick in this.
There is.
But the rest of the draft, I think, is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, this one might be a good one to have first and third. Because the third pick, I don't know, do you think there's an obvious number two?
I do.
Okay. I think so, too.
But I'm going to go with Michael Jordan. For the second week in a row, I'm drafting Michael Jordan.
decent pick, MJ. Yeah. Somewhat ironically, probably most people would say not the best player in North Carolina history, but it's Michael Jordan.
He's the best player.
He's the best player.
Who would say he's not the best player in North Carolina
history?
I
mean, you argued last week because I picked LeBron as number two and you said MJ's not a GOAT. Anyways, we'll move on from that. Number two, I think it's Tim Duncan, right? Is that the obvious choice? Tim Duncan was unreal at Wake Forest, was a guy that teams were tanking for even in the 90s. Mr. Tim Duncan from Wake Forest.
No
question.
That's
pretty
cut and dry.
Was awesome in college. Was even better in the NBA.
Is there an obvious third in your opinion?
No, this is actually where it gets pretty wide open and subjective. And even then you have to start picking name value versus actual best player.
Yeah. I think it's pretty obvious, actually. Chris Paul.
Okay. Interesting. I have Chris Paul 5 on my board.
Okay.
Grant Hill. Grant Hill was a better college player, better...
He was a great college player, but he's not a Hall of Famer. Chris Paul is a Hall of Famer.
Is Grant Hill not in the Hall of Fame?
No. Why would he be in the NBA Hall of Fame? He never did anything in the NBA.
Because they did weird stuff like that. Because the NBA has the worst Hall of Fame. He is in the Hall of Fame.
In the NBA
Hall
of Fame?
Well, there's no NBA Hall of Fame. He is in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, his college career was incredible.
7-time All-Star, 5-time All-NBA, Rookie of the Year, Grant Hill.
But Chris Paul has had the far better NBA career. Listen, you're talking to a guy who was I had Grant Hill feelers when I was in junior high school. I was a huge Grant Hill fan. But if we're talking about best basketball players to play college in North Carolina, I think Chris Paul is probably a better basketball player overall than Grant Hill.
He's had a better NBA career. I think Grant was a better college player.
Well, yeah, Chris Paul choked in the NCAA tournament.
Punched Julius Hodge in the groin.
You going to take Julius Hodge?
No, I will not.
All right, so you're going with...
Hill.
With Grant Hill. All right. I'm going to go with... I don't know if this is too early for this guy. Probably. I'm going to go with Sheed.
Oh, okay. Rasheed Wallace. Bad dude.
Who was NBA champion. Great in college.
He's Tim Duncan's my favorite basketball player of all time. Sheed's up there. Sheed was so fun to watch. Very ahead of his time. Would have been a much better player even now. They would have relaxed on the weed stuff. So it wouldn't have marked him the way it did early in his life. And like his stretch 4-5, he would have been a 5 today. Or just a huge 4, which is fine. Who was a great defensive player. Like, yeah, love Sheed. Got out in transition. Love Rasheed Wallace. All right, I can't take people who everybody hates. That's my problem.
Sure you can. Everybody hates everyone from Duke.
You know what? I'll go with James Worthy. Big game, James.
That's a great pick.
Yeah. Also on those NC teams that won a title.
I probably should have taken James over Sheed. I was kind of debating those two in my mind. On that, I mean, similar note, I'm going to go with Kenny Smith.
Oh, the Jet. Okay.
2-time NBA champion. College champion, Kenny Smith.
All right, mine. This is pretty easy for me. He honestly is the best college basketball player I've ever seen. And I hate to say this because he sucked in the NBA. Tyler Hansbrough. Tyler Hansbrough.
Oh, that was a reach.
Tyler Hansbrough is legitimately the best college basketball player of our lifetime.
Oh, that's...
Didn't he win 3 National Players of the Year?
Crazy. I don't know. Did he win 3? I have no idea.
I mean,
I wouldn't even have thought of Tyler Hansbrough.
Real at North Carolina. He was unbelievable. I hate Tyler Hansbrough. Most UNC fans will tell you he was better than Michael Jordan. He was so unbelievably good in college.
That's obviously a ridiculous take. What number am I on here, Sarah? Is this 5 or 4 for me?
5.
This is number 5. I'm going to take Big T.
Throw Bailey. Okay.
I'm going to take Big T Bailey. National champion in college, great NBA career, throw Big T Bailey.
Really quickly, Tyler Hansbrough won a title, 3-time, or was 2008 National Player of the Year, 4-time consensus All-American, ACC Player of the Year, All-ACC Tournament Player, just like unreal.
Yeah, you can find that resume with a lot of players, though. I don't know about you, just called him like the best college player of all time.
He's the best college player of my lifetime that I've seen. From freshman season to senior season, no question. All right, number 5.
He's not better than Grant Hill, your previous.
He was a better college player than Grant Hill.
Oh, that's crazy.
David Thompson.
Sheer madness.
Give me David Thompson, who had the best freshman season maybe of any player I've ever seen. And I didn't see him, but David Thompson's freshman season, I don't know if he got hurt his second year or what happened. He averaged like 35 points a game. It was in the tournament. It was like crazy. But his freshman season at NC State, 24.5 points, 8 rebounds, and then just kept getting better every year.
All right. Review?
All right, Jake, you had 1 Michael Jordan, 2 Chris Paul, 3 Rasheed Wallace, 4 Kenny Smith, and 5 Thurl Bailey. Ben, you had 1 Tim Duncan, 2 Grant Hill, 3 James Worthy, 4 Tyler Hansbrough, and 5 David Thompson.
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 I think you had me till your last 2 picks.
No Christian Laettner, which is obviously a huge miss. Christian Laettner was an unbelievable college player.
He was?
Christian Laettner?
I said he was?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he was.
Yes, yeah. Man, a lot of names.
He was on the dream team.
Danny Ferry. Unreal how good Danny Ferry was.
I almost took Zion.
Okay, yeah. Zion would have been a good pick. Didn't play long enough, probably.
Transcending college player, though.
Yeah.
Could have taken Kyrie.
I mean, there was a string of Duke point guards. Yeah. I mean, that was the position on the planet. It's where you wanted to be.
All right. That was Ben's. Did we do mine? We did. All right. What is our not sports topic today?
So we're doing top five best friendships in movies. And we're talking like duos, not like groups.
Oh, duos. Okay. No groups.
Duos.
Oh, boy. Well, that limits it.
No, not it does really. Not.
No, it doesn't.
That does not. What are you talking about? Who has? I have the first pick here.
Yep.
Wow. Good question. Let's see. I'm gonna go with. This is totally my generation. I'm gonna go with Bill and Ted.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good one. I didn't have them on my list. I love Bill and Ted. That first movie is great.
It is great.
It's so funny. I'd like. I've told you I really like
Keanu. Reeves.
I'm pro Keanu.
This was his best role and best movie. When they're introducing the historical figures to Bill's parents, that might be the funniest scene in cinema, where he's like, "This is Bob Genghis Khan,
yeah,
and Socrates Johnson."
Yeah, there. it's hilarious.
Ridiculous. And then he can't think of a name for Abraham Lincoln. He's just like, and Abraham Lincoln.
Give me Maverick and Goose. It's kind of the most our listenership. It's probably not the first one that jumped out to me, but as I was racking my brain and kind of putting these together.
You didn't like...
It's the partnership.
The original or the remake?
I loved the remake. It's better than the original, and the original's good. I do like the original. I love the remake. And it's not a remake. It's a sequel.
Reboot.
A reboot.
All right. Maverick and Goose, then. I'm going to go with Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Yeah, that's a good one. Gotta have it. I mean, that's the duo, right? That's the partnership in that movie. Kind of is the whole crux of that movie, actually. It's kind of the fun aspect that keeps that thing moving along.
And like everybody's favorite characters.
All right, I'm going to go with Andy Dufresne and Red, prison pals. And then they meet up after prison. We don't know what happens, but they go and work on a boat together on the beach or something.
Such an overrated movie.
I agree with you. That partnership is what carries that movie, though. That friendship, their chemistry together makes that movie feel like it's this great, grand movie because they are so good with one another.
All right, my next one. It's not even my favorite friendship in this movie, or these movies per se, but it is the headliner, Frodo and Sam.
Okay.
I prefer Merry and Pippin, but nobody knows who that is.
They're funnier.
I'm going to go with Frodo and Sam.
Yeah.
But Sam's the ultimate best friend.
Fine, but Frodo is so annoying in both movies and books that Sam should have left Frodo for dead like 10 times.
I'm going to go with, I don't even like this movie either, but I love this friendship, and I think he's the best part of the movie. Give me Forrest Gump and Lieutenant Dan.
All right.
I
do like that.
I love the give and take there. I get it. It's an epic.
You don't like Forrest Gump?
I don't like Forrest Gump, but.
Ben's worst take ever.
Lieutenant Dan is so good. It really kind of put Gary Sinise on the map. Like, he was a guy, but, like, he was Gary Sinise, and then he did Apollo 13, was awesome, but, like... Give me Forrest and Lieutenant Dan.
How many do I have, Sarah?
You have two left.
Two left.
This is your fourth.
I feel like I've got to dip into the kids genre.
Okay.
At some point on my list, and I'm trying to decide which one and whether to do it now.
Okay.
Timon and Pumbaa.
Yeah, that was the number one on my board. That was the very first friendship I thought of when I thought of friends.
Timon and Pumbaa.
Yep. I have it number one overall on my...
Why didn't you take it number one?
You got to play votes here.
You really got to go with some votes.
He didn't think I was going to take it.
All right. Okay, I'm going to go here. No, I'm going to save that one for fifth. I'm going to go with Harry and Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber, which I've told you people think that's you and I. Because you're blonde and I'm brunette, and we are morons.
Yeah.
So we are Harry and Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber. Just two idiots pushing each other in the wrong direction constantly.
Next Halloween,
yeah.
I expect you guys to come dressed.
Oh, we should convince KSL to do a whole photo shoot of us in those suits. We can go to the Devereaux Mansion where they shot it.
Yeah, right.
We can recreate the entire thing.
Right around the block. I'm going to stay in the kids' lane. Woody and Buzz.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, that's A+.
I mean, it shows you where I am in life, but...
That's a great partnership. That's an iconic partnership.
Woody and Buzz.
Yeah. I couldn't do too much Tom Hanks.
Otherwise, I'll tell you what I was
debating. Otherwise, I could have
gone
Turner and Hooch. I'll finish mine off. I'm going to go with... this one's not going to get me many votes, but it is a great partnership. Jules and Vincent in Pulp Fiction. Vince Vega, Jules... It's awesome.
You just had to go niche.
I mean, it's like the biggest movie of the 90s, but it's so good. I mean, it made Sam Jackson's career. It revived John Travolta's career.
Unfortunately, yeah.
But like, that was awesome. They were great together. Their chemistry was awesome. Funny. There was, you know, conflict. They were buddies.
I almost picked...
Do you want the movies? We'll give you the movies for these two, Sarah, so you can put them in if you don't know them.
I almost picked Thelma and Louise, but I hate that movie so much.
I love that movie.
Of course.
Yeah, that movie's awesome.
It's not, though.
It's really
good. It's Forrest Gump.
What? Forrest Gump is a way better movie than Thelma
and
Louise.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Fully disagree. Thelma and Louise is great.
It's not, though.
Yeah, it's really good. You want to recap?
All right, Jake, you had Bill and Ted at one, Han Solo and Chewbacca at two. Three was Frodo and Sam. Four was Timon and Pumbaa. And five, Woody and Buzz Lightyear. Ben, you had one, Maverick and Goose. Two, Andy Dufresne and Red. Three, Forrest Gump and Lieutenant Dan. Four, Harry and Lloyd. And five, Jules and Vincent.
Some obvious ones we missed.
Like what?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
All right.
Tubbs and Crockett. Even though there's only one Miami Vice movie. And it's more of a TV show. There's a handful out there. Maybe we'll let Hans and Scotty pick. I won't be surprised if they want to get in on this because this is right up their alley.
You know what I thought but I didn't think it'd give me any votes, but Robin Hood and Little John.
Robin Hood and Little John are good. You could do Robin Hood and Azeem. What's his name?
From
Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
You could also do, I just had a good one. Oh, Rocky and Apollo, right?
How about Cold Trickle and whoever Bob Duvall's character was named to Daves of Thunder.
Yeah.
Or isn't that one of the you haven't seen, Days of Thunder?
I haven't seen Days of Thunder. You could do Ricky Bobby and John C. Reilly in the racing movie.
But that's not even their most famous duo, right?
No, it's not. Yeah, you could do Step Brothers.
Step Brothers there if you're going with those two actors. All right, that was interesting. We'll get it up online. Stay tuned.
You could do Sam and Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca.
More next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
If you listening, whoa!
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone, want to remind you about Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. We're getting some suggestions on what we may have missed for best friend duos.
You know what Sarah and I talked about? There's not a lot of great female duos, but there are more female groups. They do like bridesmaids and bigger groups, and I know that's about Kristen Wiig and... what's her name? Who was also on SNL for so long? Can't think of her name. But regardless, like
the Cheetah Girls.
Yeah, it's like
the Clueless
Sisterhood
Girls,
of the Traveling Pants. You know what I mean? Like we do groups of women.
We don't generally do two.
I was trying to think of a girl and a boy, and the best one I could come up with was Thomas J. and Veda in My Girl.
Maya Rudolph, by the way. Yeah, it's a good one. Harry and Hermione.
Oh, yeah, but then there's the weird
there's Ron thing.
There's so,
that,
yeah.
That creep Ron that's always floating around.
Okay, Colton suggests twins. That would have been a good one with Arnold and Danny DeVito. Wayne, Andrew has a bunch of them. Wayne and Garth, Shrek and Donkey.
Wayne and Garth is good. Yeah, Shrek and Donkey. Good.
Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin's kind of a duo.
Cheech and Chong.
Okay.
And Lilo and Stitch.
Okay.
That's a good one.
The kids' world has a lot of them, like Moana and Maui.
And that one features a girl. Lilo, notoriously.
Anna and Elsa, although they're sisters, they're not friends.
Yeah, I said the same thing about Parent Trap, you know, but they're twins.
Yeah, so that doesn't count. It was friends.
Billy and Stu from the first Scream movie. They're serial killers. Spoiler alert. But
never saw that movie.
That's good.
Nah. Hard pass. And plus, okay, Thelma and Louise, I'm not taking advice from you anyway.
Okay.
Don't like Forrest Gump, but love Thelma and Louise?
Yeah. I didn't say I love Thelma and Louise. I said it's very good.
But it's not.
I still can't get over the Forrest Gump.
I know. See,
Either
you can just throw everything else in the garbage. Yep. All right. Stay tuned. Anson Scotty, you're coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.